And good morning. 10 minutes now before 9 o'clock on this Thursday morning. You're listening to WGBH's Morning Edition. And joining me, as he does on Thursday mornings, WGBH Arts Editor Jared Bowen. Good morning, Jared.
Good morning, Bob.
Well, we begin with a painting that goes by two names, two titles. And go ahead.
We know it really as Whistler's Mother.
Yes.
The most famous American painting not painted on American soil, nor does it reside here. However, it's visiting here in this very great fortune. It's at the Clark Art Institute for the summer, right through September 27th. And this is really because of a great exchange program that Clark has had with various museums. It normally resides at the Musée d'Orsay, where it has lived for most of its life. So this is an exception to see it here. And what the Clark is doing right now is telling this great story about Whistler's mother, how the painting came to be. And it was painted by James McNeill Whistler in 1871. He didn't consider it a portrait. In fact, he called it Arrangement in Gray and Black Number 1.
Oh, that's right, Arrangement.
And he was working in his studio. His mother had just moved in. They were roommates. In fact, he had moved his mistress, Joanne, right out right before his mother arrived, unbeknownst to his mother, because they didn't talk about these kinds of things. But he sat her down. Actually, he didn't sit her down. His model didn't show up for the day, so he decided to paint his 67-year-old mother, Anna Whistler, for the first time in her life. She started standing. It was a full-on portrait. After a few days, she grew tired of standing, so she sat down. And he painted her in profile in her dark mourning clothes, staring off into this also bleakly colored room, lots of grays, as the title suggests, grays and blacks. And so this was his first look at his mother. And I spoke with a curator, Jay Clark, about his relationship with his mother, whom I had said just arrived in Paris when he in London, rather, when he painted her.
James was her precious little boy, and she very much supported his career. Early on, I think the family was not very pleased that he had chosen the career of an artist. He started off at West Point, but after about a year, he got kicked out because of poor grades, which is not surprising, knowing the Whistler that he became. But eventually, they realized that he had great talent. And after Whistler's father died, his mother moved with him to London, and she very much supported his career. In some ways, she was a sort of yin to his yang.
Fascinating.
And what she means by that is Whistler was this flashy character. Oscar Wilde was a friend. I mean, he was in the artistic circles. He was a bit of a dandy in the way he dressed. He had this flourish in his big, curly, wavy hair. And his mother was, as she appears in the portrait, she was very conservative in the way she...
And the painting is so conservative.
Exactly. And so what we all come to understand here, too, is that Whistler was trying to be very, very radical in the way he painted this painting. We see through other pieces on view, the landscapes he did. He was very enchanted by the Thames, and he creates this sort of noirish feel, this hazy Thames that was later described as almost looking like breath on glass. We see the portraits he painted. Nobody had really painted a picture that was so sort of devoid of color and the look at space. So I asked Jay Clark as well about this departure and how it was received early on.
This was a very important painting for him. And we look at it as something that we know and love. We know the image. It doesn't seem at all radical to us. But when it was first shown in London the year after it was painted in 1872, people marveled at the emptiness of it. What was popular in painting at the time was a lot of detail, subject matter, narrative, and this was almost devoid of color and almost devoid of subject matter. So it was seen as quite radical.
That's fascinating. And, you know, it has become such a famous painting.
And it was famous virtually from the moment he painted it. In fact, I mean, it drew a lot of critical attention. Some people didn't like it. One critic said, "It's a shame that you didn't paint your mother while she was alive." I mean, they were very, very catty, just as they are today in the 1870s. We don't really know what his mother thought of it. He was extremely proud of it, and he kept it in his possession for about 20 years before he was forced into bankruptcy by suing a critic for libel. He won, but the court fees basically bankrupted him, and that's how eventually ended up in the D'Orsay. It became famous in America in the 1930s, and I tell this story too. When it was brought here and traveled, and this motherly image became a sort of salve for the nation coming out of the Depression and seeing long bread lines, and here you have this great maternal figure for an American painting this American painting, quote unquote, even though, as I said, it was painted in Europe. So that's when it became famous here. And then, of course, became the source of great satire, which everybody agrees Whistler would have hated.
Okay. Well, there we go. The complete story. And did you want to talk about another exhibit coming up at the Clark?
I should also mention right now there's this terrific Van Gogh and nature show.
Wow.
No museum or curator has really looked at Van Gogh and nature, and this is a very exceptional show. It's such a great moment to go out there to Williamstown, to the Clark. You see Van Gogh early on in his career, and it's an unrecognizable Van Gogh. These muted, speaking of Whistler and muted colors, browns, grays, blacks, as he's painting these landscapes. There's a picture of a bird's nest that suggests Audubon sensibility. Now, this again is Van Gogh, not the Van Gogh we know much later on. We see him progress. He's really enchanted by the 19th century landscape artists. And then in 1886, he goes to Paris, and it, to continue the nature metaphor, it blossoms. Mm. You see this explosion of color, and that's where he becomes the landscape painter.
Wow.
that we know him now. And it's terrific to see that evolution.
Okay, a great place to go to, the Clark Art Museum. Next, to some gardens in Stockbridge.
Yes, I moved on down the road to Stockbridge, and the Namkeg Estate is owned by the Trustees of Reservations, and this is a cottage, a Downton Abbey-era cottage in Stockbridge that was owned by Mabel Choate, a estate she inherited from her family in 1929. It's very significant because she created these gardens at her estate along with Fletcher Steele. For 30 years they designed these gardens. It's really about the art of gardening here. It's significant because she turned her property over after her death to the Trustees of Reservations. So it's a place that never changed. You can see it exactly as it was inhabited. I went there just a couple of weeks ago because the trustees are wrapping up a multi-million dollar renovation and restoration of her gardens. And I spoke with the trustees, Director Barbara Erickson, about who this very committed owner, this very early Martha Stewart, Mabel Choate, was.
Well, so she's a remarkable woman in many ways. She never married. She traveled extensively. So when you think about a young woman in 1920s going off to China and East Asia, I think speaks to how much she had an individual spirit. Because she had received the estate for herself, she had a lot of control over the design, and I think was able to really bring her own flair and whimsy into the project that being an unmarried woman at that time would have provided.
So she worked with Fletcher Steele for, as I said, 30 years to create these gardens, pulling some elements from Europe, but also, like Whistler, being quite radical and developing new styles for gardens. She considered them her garden rooms. They were spaces that could be inhabited outside. Hmm. They also have direct sight lines to various rooms of the house, so there's a connection, and you can tour the house,
wow,
tour the gardens. I spoke with the curator, Mark Wilson, about where Fletcher Steele got this distinctive style, most notably in the estate's iconic blue steps, which are Art Deco inspired.
Part of it is he's bringing in some European ideas, but it's Art Deco, and this is important because it's one of the first truly American landscape in modern landscape design. So it's seen as that transition from European design, which gardeners were relying on, to truly American.
Sounds like a great place.
It is, and the blue steps, I have to tell you, they're absolutely gorgeous.
Right.
You wind your way down them along these paper white birch trees. It's gorgeous.
Wow. Okay, and open studio?
We're on hiatus just for this week, but you can always visit us at wgbh.org/openstudio. But next week, we will be back, and you can see in full living technicolor everything that I've just talked about Whistler's mother and the Namkeg Estate.
All right. Thank you so much, WGBH Arts Editor Jared Bowen, who joins us every Thursday morning right here on WGBH's Morning Edition. Thanks, Jared.
Thanks, Bob.